So imagine for a second that you're holding like an empty sealed glass jar.
Okay, a completely empty jar.
Right. And you've sucked out absolutely all the air. You've blocked out every single photon of light, and you have even frozen this thing down to absolute zero.
Right. So to your eyes and, to common sense, really, that jar is perfectly, truly empty.
Exactly. There is nothing inside. Except, well, according to the hardest laws of quantum physics, it's not empty at all.
Oh, far from it. If you zoom in close enough, that so-called empty space is violently boiling.
Oiling.
Yeah, it's this chaotic, writhing soup of invisible energy just popping in and out of existence constantly.
And that brings us to what you and I are doing today. We are jumping into a deep dive on a really highly technical, honestly, completely mind-bending text file that's simply titled Chat Zero Point Energy Data Communication.
Yeah, it's a fascinating document.
It really is. And, the mission of this deep dive isn't to chase that classic, like, sci-fi dream of extracting endless free electricity from the vacuum.
Right, we're not building a perpetual motion machine here.
Exactly. Instead, we are exploring a framework that tells us how to take that boiling jar of nothingness, tame it, and use it to build, well, the ultimate universe-spanning internet.
Which sounds impossible, but to even begin to grasp how they do this, we have to look through a specific theoretical lens that the sources provide. It's called conditional collapse theory.
Or CCT, right?
Right, CCT. This theory sets the ground rules by dividing the whole problem of the quantum vacuum into two really distinct parts.
Okay, what are they?
You have the stationary state, and then you have the probability space.
Okay, let's unpack that stationary state first, because I feel like this is where the old sci-fi dream kind of goes to die.
It absolutely does.
When people talk about zero point energy or ZPE, they usually picture, some glowing infinite battery powering a starship.
Yeah, like something out of a comic book.
Right. But CCT makes it very clear that trying to get network or like usable power out of the ground state of the vacuum is completely thermodynamically blocked.
Because you literally cannot drain a bucket that is already at its absolute minimum possible level.
Even if that level is boiling.
Exactly. Even if that minimum level is boiling with quantum fluctuations, the laws of thermodynamics are strict. Energy can only flow from a higher state to a lower state.
So there's nowhere for it to go.
Right. If the vacuum is already the lowest energy state in the universe, there is no down for the energy to flow into your machine. It is a fundamental, unbreakable dead end.
Which brings us to really the massive semantic pivot in this text file. It's a pivot from power to information.
Yes, that's the core of it.
So think about it like this. Imagine the quantum vacuum of space is a vast, turbulent ocean.
Okay, I like this analogy.
Trying to extract energy is like trying to magically drain all that ocean water to, I don't know, spin a water wheel. The universe simply won't let you do it.
The physics just break.
But what if we just want to stand on the shore, right?
Yeah.
And we just drop a pebble into the water to send ripples across the surface?
And that right there is the shift into the probability space. In our sources, those ripples you're talking about are called a modulation trajectory.
The modulation trajectory, okay.
Yeah. We aren't trying to pull water out of the ocean. We are simply embedding our own signal into the waves that are already natively there.
Oh, wow.
And this reframes the entire goal of our engineering. Because in the old impossible energy paradigm, the goal was to drive the entropy of work to zero.
Basically trying to create perfectly ordered free energy.
Right, which you can't do. But with this pivot to communication, we just want our message to survive the noise, so the goal changes completely.
The sources call this the shift in the entropy goal, don't they?
Yes, exactly. The objective now is to drive the conditional entropy of our signal, given the baseline vacuum noise, down to zero.
So we're just trying to make the signal perfectly clear.
Precisely. We measure our success entirely in something called channel fidelity, which is represented mathematically as an R squared value.
Like in statistics.
Yep. For this vacuum medium to work, the receiver has to be able to recover your transmitted symbols out of the quantum static with an R squared greater than a critical threshold.
And the sources say that threshold is 0.85, right?
Correct, 0.85.
So if we hit that 0.85 mark, we have successfully forced the vacuum to carry our information. But here is the massive roadblock, and I know you listening are probably wondering about this.
The static.
Right. That quantum ocean we just talked about is not a calm, glassy lake. It is boiling. Our sources define this baseline turbulence as irreducible zero-point fluctuation noise.
Is ZP?
Exactly. Or they call it the SVNR floor, the ultimate signal-to-vacuum noise ratio. So how on earth do we drop a tiny pebble and expect a ripple to survive when there is literally a hurricane ripping across the water?
Well, you can't just shout into a hurricane and expect to be heard, right?
Right. Nobody would hear you.
So you have to actively quiet the storm first.
Mm-hmm.
And that requires a highly sophisticated hardware layer.
Okay. What kind of hardware?
The primary tool here is something called a squeezed vacuum source. Specifically, they use devices like optical parametric oscillators, or OPOs.
OPOs, okay.
Yeah. These devices use nonlinear crystals that are pumped by lasers to literally squeeze the vacuum quadratures.
Hold on, let me stop you right there before we lose everybody with vacuum quadratures. Let me see if I am getting this.
Sure, go for it.
So there is a fundamental limit in quantum mechanics, Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, which says you can never know both the position and momentum of a particle perfectly, right?
Exactly. You always have that fuzziness.
And our sources represent this noise floor mathematically as h bar over 2.
Mm.
Are you saying we are essentially squeezing that uncertainty like a long balloon?
That is a remarkably accurate way to picture it, actually.
Really? Just like a balloon?
Yeah, because you cannot eliminate the total amount of uncertainty or noise in the vacuum. That would violate Heisenberg's principle.
Right. The universe won't let you cheat.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But like a long balloon, if you squeeze it tight in the middle, it bulges out at the ends.
Oh, I see.
So you artificially reduce the noise in one specific phase, the phase you want to use for your signal, and you dump all that chaotic noise into the opposite phase.
Which you simply ignore.
Precisely. You just don't measure the noisy phase.
Okay. So we've used our laser pump crystals to create this artificially quiet lane on the quantum highway. We've squeezed the balloon.
Yes.
How do we actually put our data into that quiet lane?
So once you have locally squeezed the vacuum below that H bar over 2 limit, you use a Josephson or an electro-optic modulator.
Okay.
This hardware takes your external control signal, you know, your actual data, and parametrically couples it with the squeezed vacuum field.
So you are physically injecting your information into the quieted space.
Exactly. But the sources also mentioned another piece of hardware that sounds absolutely wild.
Oh, the MEMS Casimir cavities.
Yes.
They referred to these as stationary law modulators. Now, I know the Casimir effect usually involves putting two microscopic metal plates incredibly close together in a vacuum, right?
Right. So close that certain quantum waves literally can't fit between them.
Yeah, which creates an actual physical pressure. But how does moving plates around help us send a message?
Well, by dynamically altering the gap between those microscopic plates, you are literally reshaping the allowed vacuum frequencies between them.
Wait, what?
Yeah, you alter the density of the vacuum modes in real time.
Hold on. So we aren't pumping raw energy into the gap to create a signal. We're literally just moving the walls closer together and further apart to force the ambient waves to change shape.
Yes. And the brilliant part is we are doing it without breaking relativistic causality.
Wow.
We are just changing the shape of the container, which modulates how the zero-point ripples can propagate.
But, okay, if we are running laser-pumped oscillators and we're using electro-optic modulators and physically vibrating microscopic metal plates, this brings up a huge issue.
The power bill.
Yeah. None of this is free. This has to take a massive amount of power.
Which leads us straight into what the documents call the energy cost paradox.
Right, because we started out talking about zero-point energy, which everyone usually associates with free, limitless power.
The sci-fi dream.
Exactly. But what you're saying is that this communication network actually requires a massive external power supply just to turn on.
It feels like a total paradox. But conditional collapse theory clarifies this perfectly.
Oh, so?
Well, the core axiom in the text is, work is paid to collapse information, not to extract energy.
Work is paid to collapse information.
Right. Zero-point energy is strictly acting as the carrier medium here. You have to pay the universe an energy tax to quiet the baseline noise and encode your data.
So the vacuum is just the fiber optic cable, not the electricity running through it.
Exactly. You still have to plug your router into the wall.
And that energy tax isn't just electrical power for the lasers and the moving plates. The other half of this paradox is the compute problem.
Oh, the math is staggering.
Yeah, the sources mention that calculating all of this requires solving Heisenberg-Langevin evolution equations in real time.
Yeah.
What exactly are those equations tracking? Are they literally trying to calculate the position of every single random bubble in our quantum ocean?
Essentially, yes. The Heisenberg-Langevin equations track the chaotic, time-based evolution of a quantum system.
While accounting for the vacuum friction.
Exactly. And the inherent noise. If you try to calculate every single random spike and dip of that noise, just to find your one tiny encoded signal,
it would be impossible.
You would need a supercomputer the size of a city just to send a basic text message. The computational overhead is completely paralyzing.
So how do we get around that? Because we obviously don't have city-sized computers for every single node in a network.
This is where a really brilliant workaround in the CCT framework comes in. They call it ODE, CCT periodicity recognition.
Periodicity recognition.
Right. The AI running the receiver doesn't try to brute force the chaos at all. Instead, it looks for stable, repeating structures called limit cycles.
Okay, so it's kind of like trying to listen to a single person clapping in the middle of a massive roaring stadium.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it.
Right, because if you try to process every single sound wave hitting your ear from the screaming crowd, your brain will just fry.
Right, it's too much data.
But if you just listen for the steady, repeating tempo of the clap the limit cycle, you can tune out the roaring stadium entirely. The AI processor is just finding that quantum tempo.
That's exactly what it's doing. And once the AI locks onto that periodic limit cycle, it stops trying to sample the chaotic background noise completely.
So the compute load drops.
Drastically. The required sampling rate just plummets. According to the sources, this periodicity recognition slashes the compute costs incredibly efficiently.
Do they put a number on that?
They do. They use a metric called kappa, which ranges between 2 and 20.
Wow, so a factor of up to 20.
Yeah, it represents a massive reduction in the sheer volume of mathematical work the processor actually has to do.
Okay, that makes sense for like two devices sitting in a lab talking directly to each other.
Sure.
But what happens when we scale this up to a global network? Because the text calls this a zero-point mesh. If you have 1,000 nodes or 1,000,000 nodes, doesn't the routing alone break the math? Trying to track the paths of entangled states across multiple hops seems like it would cause the compute requirements to scale quadratically until the whole system just crashes.
It absolutely would crash.
Right.
Which is why the network relies on something called an entropy-gated pruning router.
An entropy-gated pruning router. Okay, how does that work?
Well, this router doesn't try to map every possible connection in the mesh. Instead, it acts like a ruthless editor.
Ruthless editor. I like that.
Yeah, it constantly evaluates the collapse potential, the R-squared fidelity we talked about, of every single link in the mesh.
So if a pathway is too noisy, or if the fidelity drops below our 0.85 threshold, what does the router do?
It just prings it. It drops the connection entirely.
It cuts it off.
Exactly. The router only keeps the absolute highest fidelity, low entropy paths open. It ignores all the messy, mathematically heavy roads and only routes traffic on the clear quantum highways.
Which keeps the compute load perfectly manageable, regardless of how large the network grows.
Exactly. It scales beautifully.
But if this router is pruning connections left and right, throwing away messy paths just to keep the computer from melting down, is any data actually getting through? What kind of speed are we realistically talking about on these quantum highways?
So the theoretical limit for the speed of this network is defined by what's called the HSW bound.
The Hullabaugh-Schumacher-Westmoreland bound, right?
That's the one. For a low-power modulation, the capacity sits at about 3.2 bits per use.
I mean, 3.2 bits per use doesn't exactly sound like a lot.
It doesn't, right. Until you factor in the frequency of the vacuum modes.
Oh, because they're fast.
Extremely fast. We are operating in the optical terahertz scale here. That means you have billions upon billions of usable modes per second.
Wait, so what is that total out to?
When you scale a math out, the theoretical limit points to data rates of 10 to 100 gigabits per second.
Wow. So you're talking about a vacuum-based internet that rivals or even beats our best terrestrial fiber optics today.
Without having to lay a single physical cable between the nodes.
That's incredible. But let's pump the brakes on the sci-fi implications for a second.
Okay.
Just because we are using the quantum vacuum to get those insane speeds doesn't mean we get to break the fundamental rules of the universe.
True.
Does this mean we can talk to, say, a colony on Mars instantly?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
The sources are very, very strict about what they call the hard limit.
Causality.
Causality, yes. We are interacting with the quantum vacuum, but we are still bound by the laws of relativity.
Yeah.
This is not superluminal, faster than light signaling.
So no magic Ansible.
No. Your communication speed is strictly limited by the speed of light, C times T.
And beyond that hard speed limit, there's a massive range limit too, right? The signal doesn't just travel forever.
No, it decays rapidly due to a phenomenon called decoherence.
Right.
As your perfectly squeezed, highly ordered signal travels through the chaotic vacuum, the quantum correlations naturally degrade over distance.
They just wash out.
Yeah. The maximum distance they can survive and still be readable is called the coherence length, or lambdas.
Is distance the only thing killing our coherence, or is something actively destroying the signal?
Actually, the biggest enemy to coherence length isn't distance itself. It is heat.
Heat.
Yeah, thermal photons act as violent disruptions to the zero-point field. If the physical environment around your hardware is too warm, the thermal noise completely masks the zero-point fluctuation floor.
Oh, I get it. It would be like trying to listen for our clapping person in that stadium. But now someone has parked a literal jet engine right next to you.
Exactly. The thermal noise just drowns everything else out.
Which explains why the physical infrastructure of a zero-point mesh is incredibly demanding. You cannot just broadcast this through the open air of a normal room.
No, not at all. The sources state that to preserve the quantum vacuum as the dominant carrier medium, the system requires a cryogenic vacuum enclosure.
Like, how cold are we talking?
The hardware has to be cooled down below 4 Kelvin.
Wow, that's just a few degrees above absolute zero.
Yeah. So we are talking about highly confined, incredibly cold, heavily shielded infrastructure just to make the vacuum behave.
And even under those pristine cryogenic conditions, the signal still fades over distance.
It does. But the mathematics offer a way to push back a bit.
How so?
For every 3 decibels of vacuum squeezing you apply at the source, you extend your effective communication range by about 1.4 times.
Oh, so you literally push the noise floor lower to let the signal coast further before it degrades.
Precisely.
But, I mean, 1.4 times extensions aren't going to get us a planetary internet. If we want a true global zero-point mesh, we have to bridge massive distances. Thousands of miles.
Which is why a global mesh would rely on quantum repeaters and a fascinating process called entanglement harvesting.
Entanglement harvesting. What is that? Are we scooping up entangled particles in a net?
Not quite a net, but we are using a quantum correlation processor to extract non-local quantum correlations directly from the vacuum field itself.
Wait, so the vacuum already has entanglement in it?
The vacuum naturally contains entangled states just waiting to be tapped.
That's wild.
Yeah. By harvesting those natural correlations, we can theoretically bridge vast distances without the signal degrading to thermal noise. They act as stepping stones across the planetary network.
Okay, let's pull all of this incredibly dense physics together for a second.
It's a lot to take in.
It really is. We started this deep dive looking at a myth, really. The idea that the absolute vacuum of space is an infinite battery waiting to be tapped.
And we learned that trying to extract power from that stationary ground state is a complete thermodynamic dead end.
Right. But by fundamentally shifting our focus from energy to information moving into that probability space, we realized we can use the boiling vacuum as an incredibly high-speed internet.
Yes.
We are quieting the noise with laser-pumped oscillators. We're physically reshaping frequencies with microscopic moving plates. And we're using roofless AI routers to manage an overwhelming computational load.
And importantly, this is transitioning from theoretical math to physical engineering as we speak.
Yeah, the documents clearly lay out the immediate next collapse target, right?
Right. The goal right now is to build a physical 2-node vacuum correlation link.
Just to prove it works.
Exactly. They plan to use squeezed light and homodyne detection.
Which is a way to extract the phase-encoded signal from the carrier wave, right?
Yep, and physically measure that R-squared value.
Mm-hmm.
If a lab can consistently recover a signal with an R squared greater than 0.8.
Then this entire concept graduates from a speculative math paper to a viable engineering discipline.
It proves that our tiny pebble can actually create a ripple in the quantum hurricane.
That is just so cool. And guiding all of this hardware and all of the math and all of the cryogenic cooling is the core axiom of conditional collapse theory. AI reduces intelligence thresholds by paying with work.
Yes. We are definitely not getting anything for free.
No, we are paying the universe heavily with external electrical energy, with intense cryogenic cooling, and with massive computational processing, all just to navigate the lowest entropy path through the quantum vacuum.
It is a profound universe-level trade-off. We give up the impossible dream of free energy, but by paying that steep tax, we gain access to the fundamental fabric of reality as a communication medium.
Which leaves you with something pretty wild to think about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we've spent this entire time talking about how to engineer the vacuum, how to squeeze the noise, and how to build a network. But let's zoom way out for a second.
Okay.
If advanced intelligence inevitably realizes that using the quantum vacuum is the most secure, most efficient, highest bandwidth method of communication in the universe, what does that mean for us looking up at the sky?
Oh, I see where you're going with this.
Right. For decades, our SETI programs have been pointing massive satellite dishes at the stars, listening for radio waves.
The old way of doing things.
Exactly. But if the universe's ultimate internet is actually built on zero-point fluctuations, maybe space isn't actually silent.
Wow.
Maybe we shouldn't be looking for primitive radio waves at all. Maybe we just haven't learned how to listen for artificially squeezed quantum noise.
That completely changes how we look at the empty space between the stars. It really does.
Until next time.